Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
And welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and I'm joined by my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going well, Chris. Tangled up in cords a little bit here. I think I got to get into 2021, almost 2022, and go fully wireless.
Yeah, that would be nice. I know yesterday I actually had to change out an extension cord because the one I was using was so long. I'm like I don't know what it's like where you live, Kev, but in Alberta, where I am, we sometimes have to plug in our vehicles because we have block heaters. When it gets really cold, usually I wait till it gets minus 20 degrees Celsius, that type of thing. But the biggest problem is, my one vehicle I got to park on the street, I got to run a cord out to it. Sometimes I don't have a cord that's long enough, so I have to, move it and all this other stuff. So here I have this one cord in my house that, I don't know, I'm guessing is probably, 50 feet. And it'd be perfect. So, I switched it out yesterday, untangled a bunch of stuff. It's crazy how cords just kind of build up. Over time.
I have found that in my own home, usually it's, oh, geez, I need a cord. And then I have, random junk drawers and baskets and stuff like that. I can usually find one I need. When I'm at my mom's, because I'll be doing this soon to go up and down to the attic, set up her Christmas tree and decorations and all, I can never find the right cord there at all. Mm-hmm. So I apparently accumulate them more so than previous generation does.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's just Kevin and I tonight. Lillian and Ragnar are not here, unfortunately. Ragnar right now is at a show in Edmonton. He's selling some stuff. So, unfortunately, I can't. I was gonna go meet up with him this weekend, but because of some work stuff, I can't go this weekend. But on the plus side, apparently it's supposed to snow on Saturday, so I'm kind of worked out, because I hate winter driving, especially up here with, the other day was crazy, Tuesday night, there was, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes of rain, and it turns to straight ice, and it was bad. It was really, really bad, and it was crazy. It was only, 20 minutes, and it went from roads being good, sidewalks being clean, to skating rink everywhere.
I feel like we're close to that. I've had a few mornings where driving is fine just because there's so much traffic, but as soon as I pull to the work parking lot, it's, two hands out and penguin walking it to just make sure I make it to the door without falling.
Yeah. Well, on the, the boots I normally, that I wear, I got ice cleats on them. I turned them down so I could walk on the ice. So anyway, long story short, I'm walking over to my sister's place with my son, because he was out for a visit. And my son is, because he's just wearing his shoes, he's sliding on the ice. He's enjoying it. And here I am, doing, the penguin walk, scared I'm going to break my arm. Yeah. But I guess that's what 20 years difference does. He's just having fun, and here I am, I worry about breaking my ankle. When you get older, that's a serious thing, man. I don't want to break anything.
No, and I mean, I want to slide and goof around, but one, I'm not quite sure how good my insurance is.
Yeah, exactly. And
then two, depending on what I break, can I do my job?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I don't want to be... I guess it's not a workplace injury. Because my wife is on WCB right now, which is workers' compensation due to a workplace injury she suffered. And I know how frustrating it is for her. Like, she's waiting for surgeries and the whole COVID thing. You know, everything got delayed, and I just don't want to. You know, we out of our family, out of the adults. I shouldn't say adults because my son's an adult. out of the parents, you know, one has a hard time as it is. We don't need two of us, right?
Yeah.
But it's just funny that, you know, when you're young, you don't think about things like that. So anyway, as I mentioned, Ragnar and Lillian aren't here, so we won't be doing our top five best and worst series finales tonight. We won't do that segment because we need those guys here. So for tonight's episode, our main topic is wrestling. This is a wrestling episode, and we're going to be talking about our top five professional wrestlers of all time and honorable mentions. But aside from that, we'll be doing our brain candy segment. You know, the new Hawkeye series just came out. Masters of the Universe Revelations came out. I got a few things to say about that. And then we'll get into our geek news and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, let's kick it off. We're talking about our top five professional wrestlers of all time. Kevin, number five on your list, sir.
All right. I'm only putting it five because it's a tough pick now. But there was a time not that long ago that CM Punk was my favorite wrestler. And I remember being at a friend's house. We had different friends that we would all get together and watch wrestling each Monday night or pay-per-views or whatever.
Yep.
And it was the night he cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase. And I'm going nuts. I can't believe I'm going to finally see him be a world champion. My friends are like, he's not going to succeed. He's not, you know, they're going to do swerve. He's going to lose it later in the night. Something. Everyone doubting him. And then he won. I enjoyed his indie stuff because I just liked his attitude. He did Straight Edge Society in WWE. He did the infamous pipe bomb segment. He seemed so cool to me, and just a person of like his own master. Yep. You know, yeah, I'm in WWE. I'm doing all this stuff, but I'm me. I'm in charge of myself, my own destiny. My own character, and there's just something cool about him. And then he left. He up and left, and there's plenty more stuff that happened. He had his failed UFC career. He wrote a couple comics. He tried a couple, you know, some acting. Nothing really clicking with him. He fought with his friends. He sued WWE, he got sued by them. Like, just so much stuff, and it was bad thing after bad thing, and I'm, you know, losing more and more respect and love, and just like, Jesus, this is not the same person.
Yeah.
And I would go back and I watched his documentary that WWE put out. I'm like, that's the person I enjoyed. What the hell happened to him? Like, where did he go? Mm-hmm. And then he returns on AEW this year, and he flat out said, if I upset you in the last 7 years, I'm sorry, I had to get myself better first, and I feel better now. Hmm. And I was like, geez, he's flat out owning it.
Yeah.
You know, so if he was like, listen, I worked for this company for a while, and it made me hate wrestling, and it made me hate that world, and I need to get my head back on straight again, and I'm sorry, and now I'm there, I can forgive that. I can look past that and be a fan again. He's had very fun matches and cool things going on, and I'm growing my fanship again. But I do know there's a lot of people that can't stand him, and I certainly get it because I was pretty much there myself.
Well, that's good that you know, he's come around and admit, you know, well, wrestlers, they're people too, right? Like, and celebrities, yeah. And you know, and it's got to be a tough life. Like, I know the lifestyle of a wrestler, like going from town to town. Like, there's a lot of drinking, a lot of partying, and you know, I definitely could see it getting to a person after a while. Yeah, I'm not saying that's what was going on, but
No, and it's not like you owe me or you know, Dance Monkey Dance because I'm paying money.
Yeah.
But there is a certain something to I as a fan and collectively we as fans have invested so much time, energy, and money in you. You can't just say screw this and leave us.
Yeah. Like
there's a better way to remove yourself or retire or walk away or whatever.
Yeah.
Than to just like stick up your finger at everyone and say, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I think that's what bothered me. Like, you know, people, okay, The Rock went on to do movies. John Cena went on to do movies. Some people just flat out get older and they do it less and less. And then they're like, okay, I'm done. Yep. And that seems a more respectable way to leave, to walk out. But from just like, screw this, I'm out and screw everyone. I was like, all right, well, why did I have your figures? Why did I have your t-shirts?
Yeah.
If that was the reaction to it. And you're right, they're human, stuff happens. But him coming back, seeing to really have his head on better than he's had it in years, I'm like, all right, I'm not spending money on you again yet, but we're building up this relationship again here.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, like if you had a falling out with a friend, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to take some while to earn that trust back, but that door is not necessarily closed. Excellent. All right, well, number five on my list, I'm going old school, and I'm going with Andre the Giant.
Ooh, all right.
Obviously he's, one of the biggest wrestlers to ever have wrestled. But I just remember as a kid just loving him. And, you know, and when he showed up on The Princess Bride, like, he was my favorite part of that movie, I think. Him and Sean Wallace. Wallace Shawn. Wallace Shawn, not Sean Wallace. Those were my two favorite parts of that movie. Andre, like, HBO did a documentary a couple years ago, two-hour documentary about Andre the Giant. I highly recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it. It brought a tear to my eye, you know, like, I really feel for him. I think more so than any other wrestler, really. You know, he was, it was both a blessing and a curse, more of a curse, you know, his giantism, you know, like, it allowed him to have this life and achieve this celebrity. But at the same time, it also robbed him of his life. It's not like, he couldn't just, do like, you know, the Thing does on the Fantastic Four and, you know, put a fedora on and a trench coat and, you know, not expect to be noticed. Like Andre the Giant literally is noticed or was noticed wherever he went. You know, because he was usually, you know, foot and a half taller than most people. So he couldn't really hide it. So he was always, you know, being hounded for, you know, autographs and pictures and all this other stuff. And from what I understand, he was very gracious, very, very nice about it. But it's got to be tough. You know, it's got to be tough having that life, especially being on the road, because things aren't built for him. You know, like, they didn't cover this in the documentary, but I know I watched, it was when Jake the Snake was on the Joe Rogan show. And he was talking about, like when you think about it, when you're that big, a normal toilet doesn't work for you. It won't. So those are like some of the problems that, you know, that's this poor guy had to deal with. I mean, you know, being on the road, you don't get to choose what kind of toilet you get in your bathroom. Like, you get whatever's there. And, you know, it was tough, but I'm told, he was a really kind person. I unfortunately never got to meet him. And like I said, I think he was like 46 when he passed. Like he wasn't really that old, you know, and he was in a lot of pain, and it was really too bad. But when he was wrestling, I mean, he was very entertaining. You know, the Andre Hulk match, WrestleMania. It was WrestleMania 3, right? I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, it was epic. I remember watching that as a kid. You know, because as a kid, I was a Hulk Hogan fan. He's one of my honorable mentions. I loved Andre the Giant. I think he was fantastic. And like I said, that documentary, you know, if anything, watch that documentary. It was great. They did a great job with it. All right. Kevin, number 4 on your list.
All right. Going old school as well. Yeah. I'm going to put in Jake the Snake Roberts.
Nice.
And, you know, as a kid, he just comes out with a snake. And whether he was a good guy or bad guy, he would still throw the snake on someone, and it was interesting. But as an adult going back and watching this stuff, you realize just how good he was in the promos.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't yell. He didn't scream. He wasn't like, let me tell you something. Yeah. You know, he just carefully crafted these words in this play and a web almost to get you suckered in, and the cadence of his voice and everything was so impressive, and you just got drawn into it. And he did that whether he was a good guy or bad guy. But then when he was a heel, he went even further with this stuff and just seemed really psychotic and manipulative and all. And it just it's so impressive to see now. And you see little things he did when he just flat out went too far. Having the snake bite Randy Savage's arm, just lock right into it. Bringing out the Cobra to attack Elizabeth on the wedding day. There's so much shady stuff. And it's a shame that his demons got to him, too. But then I wonder, like, if he wasn't on all the crap that he was and had the messed up mind he did, he wouldn't have been doing those promos. He wouldn't have been that character because he couldn't have gone to those places in his head to create that. So unfortunately, he, you know, part of him having this legacy is because he was messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But man, he, like, watching it now, I'm thinking everyone that goes out there and cuts a ridiculous, trite, paint-by-numbers, we've heard 100 times promo needs to start watching him. Like, this is, and not necessarily parrot him or copy him, but this is a way to do something differently, and you stand out, too.
Yep.
But then he said something, I forget, it was a documentary for someone, I can't remember who right now. Honestly, maybe it was a documentary for Jake, but the idea was you work with Jake, and that would decide if you were good enough to go have a program with Hogan when Hogan was on top as champion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, if you can be a heel, get a crowd reaction here, hang in the ring and all, then we can bump you up to a bigger storyline. But if you can't have the crowd into it when you're with Jake Snake, then you're not gonna last with Hogan. Why would he waste his time on someone like you?
Yeah.
And I'll see stuff now and go, geez, the way that he would just control the flow of a match and listen to the crowd and know what's going on. And all right, we got to go a little faster here, a little slower here. Let's do just a look to the camera, just look out to the crowd, not, you know, flamboyant thing, not playing, you know, to the cheap seats and all, but just these tiny little nuanced things that he did that, because it was so subtle and because it was him doing it, elicited this huge reaction. So he stands out so much because when people were loud, he was soft. You know, when people were friendly, he was scary. Like, he was just such a antithesis of other things going on at the time that now he stands out as so unique and iconic because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent choice. He is also in my honorable mentions.
Ooh.
And you saw that documentary? That was it Netflix that it was on?
He did. I'm trying to remember where I saw it, because I saw he was in Beyond the Mat when they did that. There's a story for him.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they did a Jake the Snake episode of, yeah, because the whole family's messed up. So they did a Jake Snake episode of Vice Dark Side of the Ring.
Okay, yeah.
But then he had like a three-disc WWE DVD set. So first disc was documentary, and then the other disc, and I think it was three, were
matches.
Great matches and, you know, promos and stuff like that and all. And it was somewhere in there, it may have even been Paul Heyman, just saying, you know, Jake was the guy for promos, for getting his voice out there and all, and just the way that he would control stuff. And when he's clean and good, he still has an incredible mind for this stuff.
Yep.
But when he's messed up, he goes so far.
Yep. Yeah. I think that documentary that I watched, I watched it on Netflix up here in Canada. I want to say it was like 2015 or 2016. Because I actually met him in 2014, and the documentary took place after, like, because that was the story of the documentary, was him cleaning, getting himself cleaned up, with, what's his name there?
DDP.
Yeah, DDP. And the trials and tribulations there, and then him getting inducted into the, Hall of Fame there. From what I understand, if I remember correctly, the movie The Wrestler was actually loosely based on Jake the Snake, that character. You know, about a wrestler that was once upon a time at the top, and then just, you know, getting out of control, you know, and basically left with nothing. And, you know, Jake the Snake, as far as I know, he's still clean. Is one of those stories that had a happy ending. Like, he found himself and found his sobriety. So kudos to him. When I met him, and I've told the story before on one of the previous wrestling episodes, he was quite drunk when I met him. And very intimidating. Like, quick synopsis. My son and I were at a Calgary Comic Con. Jake the Snake was one of the wrestlers that was there. It was the Sunday. We were out having dinner. I think it was like 4 in the afternoon. And there was a bunch of the wrestlers staying at our hotel. And they were at a table. And, you know, there was Million Dollar Man, Jake the Snake. I can't remember who else was there. Those are the two big ones. And I told my son, you know, because my son, he was a wrestling fan. He might still be a wrestling fan. I'm not sure. But he was more modern, like the Hardy Boys were his favorite wrestlers, Matt Hardy. So anyway, he didn't really know who these guys were. So I explained it to him, you know, they were, you know, big wrestlers in the 80s and early 90s. So he went over there, got their autographs. Came back to the table, and he was excited. They were really nice to him. They were really genuine. And then Jake the Snake come walking up to our table, and he was very drunk. Like, I could tell. And I mean, like I said, this is like 4 in the afternoon. And he, you know, he's talking to my son, how you doing, buddy, and all this other stuff, and he's good. And then he's like, who's this guy? And he pointed at me, and he's like, that's my stepdad. And Jake the Snake just gave me the most, like, evil look, like I was a piece of crap or something. And he looked at my son and was like, just give me the word and I'll kick the shit out of him. And Bailey just laughed, and he's like, no, that's okay. And then Jake the Snake left. Like, he left the lounge. And I remember thinking to myself, I think if Bailey would have just said, yeah, kick his ass, he would have. Like, he really yeah. would have. And, like I said, like, I mean, he was very drunk. He was not in good shape. You know, but at the same time, I know that this guy could have kicked my ass. Like, even though he's, like, my dad's age, this guy, and he's in probably in the worst shape he's ever been in his life. But I know this guy could still kick some serious ass if he wanted to. So I was so grateful that Bailey, you know, didn't say, you know, kick his ass. But then, yeah, you know, it was a funny story to tell. But then, like I said, when I saw that documentary, it was so nice to see him get cleaned up. Because at the same time, like after he left, I could hear the other wrestlers at the other table talking, and they're saying about how he's been, you know, how many shots of tequila he was doing, and all this other stuff, and they were all saying like he's messed up, like, you know, he needs help, and I'm just glad that he got that help, you know. So, you know, it's like I said, you know, the unfortunate thing with it's not just wrestling, with a lot of professional sports, is it doesn't always end well for everybody. So I'm glad that he got help, and it, you know, for now is doing good. So that's a good thing. All right. So number four on my list is Bret Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart. To be honest with you, when Bret was in prominence, I wasn't watching a lot of wrestling then. I mean, I knew who he was, of course. You know, I knew his family. I knew the dynasty of Stampede Wrestling, and I knew like there's a little familial connection, like Stu Hart, and I'm not sure who his friend was actually friend, like not Stu Hart, but a friend of Stu Hart's was friends with my grandpa, and so they used to, Stu Hart and this friend of my grandpa's who was also in the wrestling, I'm not sure who he was, would come up and go hunting during hunting season on my grandpa's property, and you know, Bret and Owen would come with them sometimes. I remember my grandma telling me that when they were just little boys, and about how much pancakes they would eat. They just, I guess, loved my grandma's pancakes. So that was always cool. I always liked that. But where I really became a fan of Bret, where I really felt for the guy, was the A&E documentary Wrestling with Shadows. Because it, you know, chronicled him leaving the WWF, going to WCW, and of course the climax of the documentary is the Montreal Screwjob, and the realness behind it, you know, like him really punching out Vince McMahon, and you know, him spitting in Vince McMahon's face, you know, and all that. That's, you know, I don't know how many times I've watched that documentary. It's one of my favorite documentaries. It's been years since I watched it, but it seemed like back then, like in the early 2000s, like A&E would, like, it was like every second weekend it seemed like it was on A&E. So whenever it was on, I'd be watching it. But yeah, no, he's just a genuinely nice guy. He's a great Canadian. You know, just that whole family, you know, all around good people, and not only is he a great Canadian, but he's a great Albertan. Like, he, you know, he actually only lives like 3 hours from me, so that's pretty cool. So yeah, number four, Bret Hart. Kevin, number three on your list.
And I'm going to just piggyback for a moment. When we were doing our house show podcast, rewatching old wrestling pay-per-views for Retro Network, mm-hmm. we started with In Your House, and Bret was by far the best talent on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we would say, okay, the match of the night is the one with Bret. Who's he against? Doesn't matter. He just made whoever he was with look so good. And absolutely gets screwed over by Vince McMahon at the end, and there's so much stuff in history and so much stuff now where I think most wrestling fans are just like, hey, WWE is not a good company,
mm-hmm.
and it sucks because you want to support the wrestlers you like,
yeah,
and you still can, but the company itself is just not run by good people.
No.
And it's not a good thing for it. And you see it going back to stuff with Bret, and the more you dig, you find out, you know, so many other things too. But to be just no wrestler from any country is such a national hero like he was.
Yep.
Like the Canadian Stampede in your house pay-per-view is one of the craziest reactions I've ever heard in my life. As soon as the first member of the Hart family comes out, those fans just erupt and don't calm down until the show goes off the air.
Yep.
Like, just absolutely love that family. And plenty of tragedies and sad stuff happening too. But yeah. Like, well, what a wrestling family.
Oh, yeah. And one thing I just wanted to add real quick is Brett really worked his way up. Like, I mean, you know, his dad, you know, was in Stampede Wrestling, blah, blah. No, he had to earn his way there. Like, he really had to work at it. Like, obviously, when you see his body, like, yeah, he was working at it. But I know one of his earlier jobs with Stampede is he actually was a driver. Like, he had to drive the wrestlers to different shows. I can't remember. Maybe it was the Andre the Giant documentary when Brett was talking about driving Andre to wrestling. Like, he'd have to drive him into Saskatchewan for like, say, Saskatoon, for example, to a show. And anyway, I think it was the Andre the Giant documentary, because he was talking about how he would, like, have to get a flat of beer for Andre, and that was just to go to Saskatoon. He would have the flat of beer done by the time they got there. But yeah, no, Brett, he worked his way up and earned, you know, the love and admiration of a nation, really. But anyway, sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
No, you're fine. For number three, now it's kind of funny because when I first discovered ECW in the 90s, like most fans, and from my area, MSG, which was Madison Square Garden, had its own cable channel at the time. Maybe they still do. ECW was aired pretty much like an infomercial. Could be on at midnight, might be one morning, might be two, might be Friday night, might be Saturday night, might be Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, just wherever it fit in. But once you discovered it, we would all make plans. And, like, I would put in a videotape and just hit record because I knew I was going to fall asleep, but I wanted to make sure I caught it.
Yep.
So then I would wake up in the morning, 6 hours is recorded on this tape, ECW's on there somewhere, and I would find it so I could watch the latest episode. And I thought at the time that Tommy Dreamer was my favorite. Mm-hmm. And I followed his story and his feud and rise and fall and always wanting him to win. And then he, you know, has worked for other places and never, I don't think, ever captured that level of magic again that he had in ECW. And then he kind of got to become a little bit of a joke, partly his fault, partly, you know, just life and getting older and all. But looking back, I'm like, I don't think it was Tommy Dreamer. I think it was Raven. And that's who I'm picking here. But Raven was just emo 90s slacker, hating the world and blaming the world for everything, and just such a jerk bad guy, dragging people's children into it, having his collection of misfits that would, you know, take the beatings for him so he could win the matches.
Yeah.
And then I would see him in interviews, and they call them shoot interviews too, where it's like some company will pay to be like, hey, we're going to talk to this guy for 2 hours and he's going to give honest answers. Well, as honest as you want to believe, it's wrestling. Someone's always getting worked. But just telling stories, and he would tell his fantasy booking ideas, and he's such a goof and you know, would tell the stupidest things and jokes and laugh and all. I'm like, man, he just seems like such a cool guy that loved wrestling. You know, he partied, he hung out, he wrestled everywhere, he enjoyed it. He has a brilliant mind for, you know, just creating stories and creating characters and plot lines that people would like to do. To go back, I believe, it was in early Ring of Honor. He showed up and he's like, all right, who's here that I could make some money off of, or with, rather? Mm-hmm. And he sees a young CM Punk and he's like, we could do something. Like, there's someone that has the same rock star attitude gimmick I do. And they just tore it up for months. Incredible feud. Like, a thing that showed Raven could still do it and put Punk on the map for building him up. I lost it. He was in early TNA Impact Wrestling and won their title when it was still the NWA title. I was like, all right, he's got a world title again. Because I always felt he was mismanaged in WWE, which the big rumor is that the first time Shane McMahon did drugs and got a little too, not inebriated, but, you know, high or whatever, was with Raven. And when ECW folded and he was brought back in later on, apparently one day he walks by backstage and Vince McMahon flipped out and said, who the fuck hired Raven? Like, wasn't even aware he was still working for his company. And he did his hardcore title stuff, and honestly, that was about it, unfortunately, before getting released. But geez, I loved it. You ever hear the story that he almost knocked out Power for all of WrestleMania?
No, no.
So they did a hardcore title match at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
it was Raven, Big Show, and Kane. So Raven by far the smallest of the bunch.
Yep.
And they were supposed to do a chase where they were on golf carts because the arena for WrestleMania was so huge. So they were going to chase each other on golf carts with a referee riding in the back of one of them and just do like a loop around the building and then come back and continue the fight. Well, immediately, I think it was Big Show, goes kind of like off to the side and crashes in.
Yeah.
So Raven tries to go after him, and then they have a fight up against this fence, this like chain link fence in the basement, and now the golf carts are stuck, and they're like, all right, well, this whole thing that's supposed to take up like the next 5 minutes is now a dud, so let's just, we'll fight here, I guess, and kind of called it on the fly. If that chain link fence wasn't there to kind of like catch the golf carts, they would have hit the main power supply for the building, which would have knocked out all the lights for the building and the satellites for WrestleMania. They would have taken the biggest pay-per-view of the year off the air. And honestly, something like that probably would have taken forever to get back going. It's not like, oh, hey, we'll have it, you know, back up in 5 minutes, then stay with us. No, that probably would have been like it for the day.
Yeah. Crazy. Awesome. All right. Well, number three on my list, I'm going with The Rock. You know, I just love Dwayne Johnson. You know, he's in a lot of things now, and I mean, I'm not trying to sound like an asshole. He's not a good actor. Because he's just himself. He's like Nicolas Cage. I mean, you watch Nicolas Cage in a movie, he's Nicolas Cage.
You know, yeah, my big one for that is Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and yes, yeah. You know, always the same guy and blah blah blah. But you know, I can't help but love The Rock though, because you know he's just a genuinely nice guy. Yeah, well, I guess the only one that he was actually different was well, what's that? That anime.
Moana? Shockingly good movie.
Yeah. I know my nieces and nephews just love that movie. And of course he was great in it. But, you know, I don't know. I just, I like The Rock. You know, I liked it when he was a heel. You know, for Stone Cold. And for whatchamacallit. Well, he wasn't a heel for the Hogan fight. He was for the second one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, him fighting Goldberg and stuff. But, you know, I just, you know, genuinely nice guy. I haven't watched his show, like, that sitcom they're doing about him.
No, I haven't either, but people seem to be really enjoying it,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, well, what's it called again? I can't remember.
Young Rock.
Young Rock? Okay. Yeah, I hear good things about it. And I mean, he, you know, of course comes from a, you know, awesome wrestling background. But again, that didn't open him, you know, might open a few doors, but you know, like actually from what I understand, like Vince McMahon and people like that were telling him like, don't pursue this life, do something else. But he was so in love with wrestling. He went for it. And, yeah, just a great all around guy. And I do love his matches, you know, especially like the feud with Stone Cold, and funny. Like, I mean, you know, like you get him on with the interviewers and stuff, and and all those little catchphrases, can you smell what the Rock is cooking, and the Brahma Bull and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so that's number three on my list, The Rock. Kevin, number two on your list.
Yep. And again, to just do the piggyback thing here for a moment.
Oh, absolutely.
For wrestling, for any company really, but especially just because WWE is so huge, their goal is to have that one person, that person that, passes the grandma test. The people who don't watch wrestling know who this is.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do crossover for movies. You can have them on The Tonight Show. And of course, you can sell a ton of merchandise with them as well. So obviously, Hulk Hogan, huge one.
Yeah.
Just absolutely iconic in his time. John Cena was it for a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
There's an argument now for Roman Reigns probably to be of that level, or at least getting there, and Ric Flair for NWA. There's certain people that just transcend it, but to have two at the same time in The Rock and Austin, I don't think that ever happened before to that level. You wait all of your life as a wrestling promoter to have that one generational icon, and you get two.
Yep.
Of course they made more money than ever before.
Yep.
All right, so speaking of generational icons, though, and it's not going to be Roman Reigns, I will go with my absolute current favorite as number two, only because current, and I'll do the nostalgia for my number one. But I am obsessed with and will stop everything anytime Becky Lynch is on TV.
Nice.
I absolutely love her. I'm way too obsessed. I follow way too many Instagram accounts that are all pictures of her. One, she's absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She's redhead, Irish, and can kick ass. But then I got so involved in the character and was happening for the character that I got obsessed. So when she was looking like she was heir apparent, thought she was going to win the title, finally get her break. Charlotte wins, like Charlotte seems to always do. And Becky Lynch snaps, punches her in the face, and is supposed to turn heel. I was there that night. That took place in Brooklyn's Barclays Center for SummerSlam 2018. And I was there. And I reacted like every other fan. She punches Charlotte, is supposed to turn heel, and we're all cheering her. Like, yes, finally, you got your moment here. Is supposed to go and have a match, I think it was Survivor Series, gets her nose broken, though. And does, it was SmackDown Invaded Raw. She gets her nose broken by another wrestler. She's standing there with just blood spurting out of her nose, all cocky, like, you didn't take me down. You didn't kill me. I'm still here. But because of it, she's now on the injured list because it's like, well, you got a broken nose and you had got a concussion too, so you can't wrestle. It pushes back, and then you get her being one of three women and the first time women main evented WrestleMania, and she's the one that wins that match, and she holds both the Raw and SmackDown titles. It's like she made nothing but history that night.
Yeah.
Holds it until she gets pregnant, leaves, has a baby, comes back in brand new gear because she's like, oh, hey, I trained so hard for a comeback. I have abs for the first time ever, and I'm going to show them all off because I'm a new mom, and I have freaking abs. I was like, this girl's crazy. Turns heel is so entertaining. She comes out in the most ridiculous outfits. She just does this manipulation of like, oh, hey, I came back undefeated. I've held a title for a year and a half. What's she at? She's at 500 days as we record this. Mm-hmm. That she has held a title while active. So if you take away her maternity leave, which obviously she didn't hold title because she was gone for a while, but she was active until the day that she left, and she won a title the day she came back. So she's got 500 days straight that she's had one of the titles.
Nice.
So she'll come out there and be like, I've been a champ for 500 days. I've beaten everyone. I had a baby that I leave at home to come to see all of you, and you boo me. I was like, she's absolutely right. So she, as a heel, justifies all of her heel actions. So like any great villain, I can, yeah, I'm with you up to a point. Like, I can agree with you up to a point, and she does it. But then I got watching interviews with her because she had a build up for last pay-per-view. Whether I'm being, you know, whether we're all being worked very well, which is wrestling, so maybe. But the story, which seems to be real life, who knows, is that her and Charlotte are no longer friends. They actually can't stand each other anymore. Professional jealousy that got out of hand, and now they have to be on two separate shows because they don't even want them in the same locker room together because they'll just tear each other apart. Whether or not it's true, who knows? But I was watching these interviews, and just the stuff she's saying about like life and her work and what she does, and I'm like, God, she's actually making like really good points here. Like, she's just a really good person. Mm-hmm. So it was stuff of like, because her social media is crazy. When she was out having the baby, she would post pictures of like herself backstage on Raw, and she's like, I'm visiting friends, so everyone thinks she's going to return that night, and she didn't. She's just messing with people. And she said, I got doing social media. I was very good at it, and I like doing it to progress the storylines or progress my own brand. But the longer you're on there, you only see negative things. And she's like, if I stayed on there, I would get into that mood and I'd be negative, and I wouldn't be creating my character and going to the gym and being with my family and making myself better. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. Shit, you got an excellent point there. You know, so all right, let me try that. Let me go on social media to, you know, hype my own stuff, promote my own stuff, promote friends' things, maybe do a little back and forth, and then get out before there's more. And then I would see other things like, this is what she does for family. This is what she does, you know, to work out. This is what she does for her own mental health. And I'm like, this is someone who I just want to hear more about what they do, because clearly it's working. She's very successful.
Yep.
And I think, you know, The Rock will post his meals, which is insane.
Yeah.
You know, here's my meal prep for the week. But his ambition and his drive, that's something to look towards, too. And I've done that. And like, okay, let me take someone whose work I admire. But I'll admit, it's always been a man. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm always looking for like a male figure for this. And then the more and more I think, I'm like, all right, I have nothing in common with this woman at all, but I desire to get more done in life. Mm-hmm. And she was, out of the four horsewomen, the four women of WWE that were training and rose up and absolutely changed women's wrestling, she was always seen as the fourth, really. Like, oh, and she's here too. Oh, and she can come along with us. Like, always seemed to be treated as the lesser one.
Yep.
And busted her ass and is, I would say, the most successful of all of them now. Because she refused to be in that spot and take it. And I was just like, that's a good, you know, like, that's a very motivating factor there. So now I watch, you know, she's on a random podcast or TV show or whatever. I watch all these interviews with her now, too. I'm like, okay, this is someone that, you know, as much as I looked up to wrestlers when I was younger just as superheroes, I'm now looking up to this person as ambition and drive and motivation in life.
Excellent.
Plus she's freaking beautiful.
Yep.
I went to when I did RetroCon in, what was that, September, I think. I think it was September. We found out that SmackDown was the next city over, pretty much. Because RetroCon was in like a suburb, you know, community area, mm-hmm. around Philadelphia. So we just, you know, hopped on, went over Philadelphia, watched SmackDown, and Becky Lynch was going to be on the show. So I go to the merchandise booth. I'm like, oh, geez. So I had to buy her T-shirt, had to buy her hat, had to buy the cup that she was on, and bought a program. Turned out Turned out she was in neither because the cupping program went back to when she was gone for maternity leave, but I already bought them by the time I realized. And then we end up going to a house show a couple months later, which was in Syracuse. And I said, if the shirt's different or the hat's different, I'm going to just end up having two because I can't complete the collection. Thankfully, they were not different, so I saved money that night. But it's the only person that I am buying every figure for right now.
Right on. I can't. I was trying to look this up. I can't remember if it was her or not. But there was what was it? Was it 2019? They had a bunch of wrestlers at the Edmonton Comic Con, and it was one of the female wrestlers. I think it was her, but I'm not sure. That got stopped by the Edmonton police for speeding. And then, like, she just, like, berated them. She was like, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am?
That honestly wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, like, they figured, like, she was just, like, she was in character. I think it was her, I want to say. Because I remember the red hair, if I'm remembering. I couldn't find it, though. I couldn't find the article. But, yeah. Anyway. Excellent. All right. Well, number two on my list is Brock Lesnar.
Ooh, all right.
You know, like when I just remember when he first showed up, I'm like, who is this guy? You know, like I didn't like I thought he was like some Russian dude, but he's you know he's an American guy. But you know, like I think he showed up and he took Hulk Hogan out. I think. You know, because obviously he needed time off, so they had to make it seem like he got taken out. And I was just enthralled by this guy, you know. And then he got screwed over by Paul Heyman, and you know when he sided with the Big Show, and then he became you know went from being a heel to a good guy, and he's just incredibly athletic, you know, and a really big man. He's one of the few wrestlers that, you know, I've seen live where I was like, wow, that guy is huge, you know, like, it you know, and that was him wrestling Kurt Angle, and Kurt Angle, like, I mean, Kurt Angle's a great wrestler, don't get me wrong, he's one of my honorable mentions, but he's quite small compared to Brock Lesnar, and I guess one of the stories that I heard, like this was back in 2003, Brock Lesnar, and because Vince McMahon was also there, Vince McMahon was doing, which is weird, he was doing like a sideshow. It wasn't even like a main event, like it wasn't like a SmackDown or a Raw. It was just an arena show, and Vince McMahon was there himself. And anyway, him and Brock Lesnar went to a gym in Edmonton. And, like, nobody knew who they were. Like, and I guess they, afterwards, people figured it out. I was like, whoa, wait a second. Because Brock was still fairly new. He'd only been wrestling for, like, a year or something at that point. Like, professionally. Like, he did the whole, you know, real wrestling. I shouldn't say real wrestling.
Olympic wrestling.
Olympic, yeah. Like
he never made it to the Olympics, but yeah, he was a NCAA yeah. College champion.
And you can tell, like especially with like him and Kurt Angle, like the, you know, like there's it's you got your entertainment wrestling, and then you've got I don't want to call it real wrestling, but yeah, where you know you're actually wrestling. For real, I guess. Like it's not entertainment. It's
sport.
Sport wrestling, yeah. And you can tell, like with Lesnar and Angle, like just how good they are, like how technical they are. And I remember watching there was a Brock Lesnar WWE special. This was going back like 2003, 2004, whenever it was, and just his workout regimen, like. Is crazy, you know. And the thing is, like people, you know, a lot of times people are cynical, you know, because there used to be a lot of doping in wrestling. Hogan's admitted to it, but Brock Lesnar is not doping. Like, he is really that big, and he really worked for it. Like, when you see what his workout regimen is, how much he eats, and, you know, and all of that, like, yeah, there's a reason why he's that big. And it ain't because he's doping. He, like, that's real. So that's another reason why I admire him so much. And yeah, like when he went to the NFL, you know, I was, you know, hoping the best for him. And then, you know, when he was in the, UFC, yeah, I thought he was great there too. You know, I was never a UFC guy, but then when he showed up, I was like, well, you know, I'm gonna watch this, you know. And again, that you know, it goes to his athleticism. Like, he is an athlete's athlete. But yeah, I really like Brock Lesnar. So anyway, that is my number two. But before we go to our number ones, let's do a quick lightning round of our honorable mentions. So I'll kick it off. The Undertaker, fantastic. Love The Undertaker. The Big Show. I still got to watch that Netflix show. I'm sure it's great. Because you watched it, Kev, right? You said it was good?
The Big Show show? It seems like something that escaped from the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Like it should have been on Netflix. It should have been, you know, one of the Disney afternoon sitcoms that kids watch and goes, and honestly, if it was on there, it probably would have lasted longer.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm cool with. Like, I mean, I don't mind a little lighthearted fun. And yeah, The Big Show, yeah, he's fantastic. We mentioned Stone Cold Steve Austin. Love Stone Cold. Love that he's doing those Tide commercials with Ice-T and...
Yeah.
They had someone else on there recently. You know, it's a cold call. I love those commercials. I laugh every time. And then Macho Man Randy Savage. Love my Macho Man. Kevin, what's your honorable mentions?
I agree on Macho Man, and again, someone that I look back on now and think, oh my God, he was so good. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely incredible. Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, yeah.
For classic work, and you just see how good. And I think it really clicked with Piper when during the Monday Night Wars and height of WCW and then WO and all that. Piper comes back and he's older and his hip was bad and his body was shot and everything, but you know, he's still gonna do the one more story with Hogan. And he comes out and says to a fully heel Hollywood Hogan, "Do you think they would have cheered you so loud if they didn't hate me so much?" I was like, oh, mm-hmm. My God, that's true.
Yep.
That is so true. It was fantastic.
And thank you for mentioning Kevin. I can't believe I forgot to mention him. Just quickly, like that 2003 show I went to see, one of the guys that was supposed to be there was Rowdy Roddy Piper. Because that was when he had his little comeback after WrestleMania in 2003.
Yep.
But then he did some interview somewhere where he was...
He did.
Yeah, they were talking about the doping and stuff and he basically got fired because of it. And I was so disappointed because out of all, you know, I mean, seeing Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle, Vince McMahon, that was cool. Don't get me wrong. But Rowdy Roddy Piper, that was the main event for me. I really wanted to see Rowdy Roddy. And unfortunately, I never got to see him. Another great Canadian.
That's true.
Yeah.
Demolition and the Road Warriors.
Nice.
Which, you know, separate companies for a large portion of it, but then you did finally get Road Warriors as Legion of Doom in WWF.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Legion Doom, Road Warriors just ends up being a sad story, but for when they were on top, my God, they're so cool.
Yep.
Demolition, which started out as a copy, ended up becoming its own thing and its own greatness. And really, anytime... And we'll get it for a little while, every so often, but once every 2 years, someone puts two big guys together. It's like, okay, here's our here's going to be our Road Warriors, just two big guys that beat the shit out of everyone in front of them. And it never lasts long. Either they're not that talented, they're not that good, they break them up, someone's injured, whatever. We have not gotten a run like the Road Warriors had in forever. And I miss it. As much as I love good technical wrestling, I also want like two big people just beat the shit out of someone.
Yep.
Eddie Guerrero was fantastic.
Oh yeah. Yep.
I was huge on Rey Mysterio for a while, which is an absolute innovator and game changer for all of wrestling. I think most people watching wrestling at time remember the first time we saw a Rey Mysterio match and went, wait, someone can do that with their body? Like, he, and I mean, he's holding his own now. He's older and all. He's training his son how to be a wrestler. But when he first showed up and was just, you know, in his 20s and free of injury, or at least for the most part, geez, he was so good and so fast. It was just crazy to see.
Yep.
I was not, I enjoyed the Hardys, but I was a huge fan of Lita.
Oh, yeah.
Just this beautiful punk attitude, and then she went in there and would do the moonsault and flips and hold her own. I'm like, okay, this is cool.
Yep.
I think one last one I'll throw in, short-lived overall, but there was nothing cooler than the Brood entrance. Coming up through the fire and then having the whole vampire gimmick and everything. They just look so cool and so unique in wrestling, and I loved it. And then Edge goes on to become a star. Christian's a star, lesser than Edge, yes, but still a star as well. And then their poor vampire manager, Gangrel, just gets forgotten to history.
Excellent. Yeah, there was someone else I was going to mention. I'm not going to mention him by name, but he was around the same time as Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. He was good friends with Eddie Guerrero. But we did was that our last wrestling episode? We talked about him, yeah.
Yeah, because I think Dark Side of the Ring was around the same time.
Yeah, so I'm not going to mention him here, but, you know, he probably would have been my number two if things hadn't worked out the way they did, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, all right, Kevin, number one on your list.
All right, so I think I got to go with the person that just, you know, I had to see everything for, and I cheered for all the stuff, and I bought into the storyline completely and could do no wrong when I was younger, and it's not Hulk Hogan, although I did enjoy that, and, you know, I bought the toys and watched Rock and Wrestling and all that, but it's Shawn Michaels.
Nice.
Just, no one wrestled like him. Smaller guy, gets built up to be the star, ends up having great matches with anyone you put him in the ring with, great as a heel or a face, tricks me into believing, and all of us fans at the time, believing that he's injured when we learn later on in life, no, he just didn't want to lose the title. So he just walked away for a little bit.
Yeah.
Comes back with D-Generation X, which helps turn the, along with Stone Cold Rock, helps turn the tide for WWE to be winning against WCW. Retires, comes back, still has great matches, wins titles again, and now is the main trainer and helping to produce the shows there for NXT for getting the next generation going. And his, you know, it was after his first retirement, we all thought he was done. Comes back and does this series of matches with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which were amazing.
Yep.
Right after he did the Ric Flair retirement match, which there was a group of us watching it, and one of the guys, his fiance, whatever stage in their relationship they're in time, she's crying her eyes out for it. Like, the emotion and the storytelling that they did in that match was incredible. And I know he has issues, and, you know, he says he's found God and, you know, hasn't really done anything bad since, you know, the way that he used to.
Yep.
He trains younger wrestlers to look at their hands a little too much. if you ever see a younger one in NXT, they'll, someone will kick out their finishing move and they'll be staring at their hands like, oh my god, what do I have to do to keep this person down? And everyone does it. It's move. But I believed it when he was injured or pretending to be injured. I would wince and be worried with him. I was excited when he won titles. I would buy pay-per-views just because he was on it. He was one of the, I think the first wrestling show I ever went to, I didn't watch a single match. I just hung out trying to get autographs the whole time. Second wrestling show I went to, which was just a house show, pretty far north, like almost to Canada, but still in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
Shawn Michaels is there in the main event against Goldust. I write up a sign against Goldust. Shawn Michaels sees it, laughs, takes it out of my hand, carries it into the ring, parades around with it.
Nice.
Hands it back to me, wins the match, of course, because he was Shawn Michaels. He was champ at the time.
Yeah.
He comes back and he signs that poster for me, which I still have.
Right on. That's awesome.
But, I mean, again, all these wrestlers, celebrities, everything, we know a lot of people have made questionable decisions in their life. We know not everyone's perfect. Yeah. But I was just at that right age where he was so cool and, you know, not my hero, I don't want to say that, but, you know, I was obsessed with him. Thought he was just, like, the coolest thing on earth.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that. Yeah, I wasn't going to name him, but now I'll name him. yeah, in 2003, Backlash in Edmonton, I went to that, and it was Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and Chris Benoit. And Benoit had the World Heavyweight Championship at the time. And that was awesome. I mean, it was a rematch from WrestleMania from a month before, the Triple Threat match. But it was so cool to watch and to see. I knew Benoit was going to win because it was Edmonton, it was a home crowd, all that kind of stuff, but it was still so cool to see Shawn Michaels and Triple H, wrestling, you know. Funny story about Shawn Michaels, because his opening music, his walk down music is, you know, the Sexy Boy one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this guy I had podcasts with, a few years ago, he was telling me the story on a different podcast that I was guesting on. He was telling the story about how, like, him and his brother were wrestling fans, right? Like, big wrestling fans. They had the WWE soundtrack and all that kind of stuff of all the walk-ins. And anyway, his older brother was driving him to school. So as they're pulling up to their school, they're listening to the WWE, and Sexy Boy comes on. And his brother just cranked it, and unrolled the window. So when he dropped his brother off at school, everyone's looking at him, and all he could hear is, you know, the Sexy Boy song, and totally embarrassed his brother, and then he drives off. And I love that story. It was so funny. But. I love that. I love that theme song, that walk-in song. I think it's one of my favorites, definitely. All right. Well, number one on my list, I'm going with Goldberg.
Really?
Yeah. I've always loved Goldberg. You know, I think he's come back since, but I like when he came into the WWE in 2003. I was so excited. So excited about that, and then it kind of sucked. yeah, it was unfortunate because I guess he got into a contract dispute with the McMahons, and they refused to give him a title. And I mean, even like him fighting Brock Lesnar, because that's when Brock left to go to the NFL, and it was so disappointing. It was like, man, but Goldberg, he's, you know. To me, I've always said he's got the build of a heavyweight, but he's got the speed and agility of like a Rey Mysterio. Like he's just so fast. And I love his walk-in. Like, his walk-in is... I don't know. I think our next episode, we got to do top five walk-ins.
All right.
Because I think Goldberg might be my favorite. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. But yeah, no, I've always been a fan of Goldberg. I'd love to see him live, but I don't know if I'll ever see that. But yeah, like I said, you know, like his 10-year back, like I think he has come back since then, right? To
yes.
Okay. So yeah, you know, I wasn't watching, but, no, that was one of those matches, like, I always wanted to see him fight The Rock, and then when I saw it, it was okay, but, you know, The Rock was a heel, and, you know, I don't know, it was okay. But yeah, the build-up to WrestleMania with him and Brock Lesnar, 2004, and then, that was the match I think I was looking the most forward to, but yeah, just did not deliver, unfortunately. But anyway, that is our top five professional wrestlers of all time with honorable mentions. All right, well, let's move on to our next segment, which is Brain Candy. So this is the segment where we talk about things that we've been watching, reading, listening to, whatever, and we can give it a pick or a pan if we so choose. Kevin, what do you got this week for Brain Candy?
All right. Well, I think we got two big ones here.
Yep.
Which one do you want to do first? The cartoon or the live action?
Let's go with cartoon, because live action, I think, will be happier.
Okay. So, Masters of the Universe Revelations Part 2 went up on Netflix. I watched the last five episodes in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it took me a couple days to get through the first batch, which it what was it like 8 and 15, I think, was the breakdown, because it wasn't 5 and 5, or sorry, 8 and 5, not 8 and 15, jeez.
yes, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I liked part 1. I had a couple of things. I thought that Sarah Michelle Gellar's voice was just too light for what they're doing with Tila, for her to be this warrior woman here.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept guessing where they were going with things. And then the end of part one ends with, you know, the Skella God, pretty much. And I was like, yep. Okay, that's interesting. What finally happens if Skeletor grabs the sword and gets the power, the whole thing he was trying to do, you know, 35 years ago there, what happens if he actually accomplishes it? But with all the places they went, and the pre-Turnia and the sub-Turnia and the story and all, I was like, okay, where are you going next? So then I thought part two was just, okay, part one set up everything, now let's just go. Now it's the big fight, now it's the battles, now let's go crazy for it. And I think I like part two more than part one for it. I thought that Savage He-Man was a great idea and just crazy, pretty much like a Hulk He-Man thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, that's really cool and interesting here. I liked that. I really thought Tila and that her friend there, I thought it was going to end up being a lesbian relationship, which would have been fine, mm-hmm. but it would have... I wouldn't have cared, but I'm like... If Tila's going to be upset with Adam, you kept secrets from me, you kept this from me, then it needs more weight than I'm mad because you're my best friend.
Yeah.
If you have the weight of a relationship, that's stronger. And they never flat out went there, but there was a few things at the end of part two. I'm like, okay, you're strongly implying there's something here, which justifies her anger some more. And I'm cool with that. The Sorceress and Tila thing has been rumored and hinted. And I don't know if they ever made it official, but like I remember growing up, like, okay, yeah, that's the deal here.
Yep.
Sorceress and Man-at-Arms are together. Tila's a kid. And I don't know. I don't think it was ever officially said on Filmation. maybe hinted at. I don't know if it was in the comics, on the back of a toy, whatever. Like, I don't know where we all knew this information from, but we all knew it was implied. So to have that finally come out, be official canon, be story, I'm like, okay, yes, we got that. That's interesting. I wasn't sure what they were doing with Adam and the other wielders of the sword. So when he came back and was able to fight, I was like, okay, I'm all for it. Evil Lyn becoming this massive threat to, and having this thing of Skeletor, spoilers everyone, if you haven't guessed by now, but having this team up of Skeletor and He-Man, I'm like, okay, clearly he's going to turn on He-Man eventually. We all know that.
Yep.
But to have this moment of, there's something stronger than me, which means I can't do my evil deeds here because this thing's stronger than me, so I'm going to put it aside, team up with you long enough to remove this threat so then I can be the number one threat again. Honestly, my biggest disappointment was there were characters and toys and vehicles and stuff that didn't get worked in, and I was honestly hoping everyone was going to show up eventually.
Yeah,
I remember sitting here, I'm like, freaking Ram Man hasn't shown up yet. Where the hell's Ram Man? That was like the first group of toys, and then he does show up, and it's freaking hysterical when he does. I was all for it.
Yeah.
I would honestly love a part two. They left it off with a big tease, and if they wanted to do that, I'd be all for it. I felt that where I thought it was going a little too, I thought it was going one way with Teela.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, probably is. And I know how Kevin Smith works right now, and I listen to enough of his show, so I kind of, you know, I'm assuming where this is going.
Yep.
But in the end, I felt like, okay, it wasn't the Teela show. It wasn't making it Teela and the Masters of the Universe, which I kind of thought it was where it was going. It was, can the Masters hang without He-Man being there? Like, because you could have, you know, 98-pound weaklings. You could have Steve Rogers before the Super Soldier Serum there as the Masters of the Universe, when you got He-Man there to just beat up everyone. Like, it doesn't matter who the other ones were. So yep. I enjoyed seeing, hey, can we still be strong without him?
Yep.
And they established that they could. They established that they can all be good characters. But then it seemed like at the end there, the point was, hey, it can't just be He-Man and his sword. Might does not make right. And that's why I started to enjoy He-Man strong, because he doesn't keep the power. He's strong because he can give it up, because he doesn't rely on the sword to be strong. I was like, well, that's interesting. And then it seemed to go to all of them. We need to be smart to defeat these bad guys. We need to play on their emotions. We need to, you know, go to something more than just punch in the face. And really, the original Filmation was just, oh, yeah, we're going to punch these bad guys and throw them off a cliff and, you know, yeah. into whatever, and that's the end of the story. So I enjoyed a lot of what they did. I do see complaints that some people have had. One of the main ones being, this is a cartoon for adults, not as in it has adult themes, although Evil Lyn riding Skeletor was very surprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a little shocked by that one, but they're like, there's nothing on here that introduces these characters for a new generation.
No.
This starts out assuming that you are in your 40s and watched these shows as a kid and already know who everyone is. But I can't put the Evil Lyn Skeletor implied sex aside. I can't sit down my kid to watch the show and have him give a shit about a single one of these characters.
Yeah.
Because there's every emotion that you're bringing in to care about them, you've already carried around for a generation. They've been in your head since 70s, 80s, whatever. There's nothing to introduce people to.
Yeah.
Ninja Turtles is my go-to. It relaunches every couple of years. But they're still going to do the origin and tell you how they became the Ninja Turtles and introduce you to all four. And the first episode's just going to have the all four and Splinter. And the second episode will meet Shredder. And it's not until we get into, you know, much later that we'll introduce other characters into it. But this is all like, hey, here's the whole toy box. Everyone's here. Let's go have fun. All right, can you tell me some names? Can I get some character motivation? Who's good? Who's bad? You know, like for someone like my kid, they wouldn't know any of that.
Yep.
And I mean, I think I had it on one day and he couldn't share less.
Yep. Well, there's that other He-Man series that is also on Netflix. It's a new one. I haven't watched it because to me, the animation style isn't, I don't really like it. But I actually am hearing good things. Like it is a good show for kids to be introduced to the He-Man universe. I mean, it doesn't look the same, but...
Right, but and that's fine. I'm all for changing the looks of things and the kid to have, hey, this one is mine.
Yeah.
Because it looked different, so this one is mine. I'm all for that. And yeah, I haven't done it because I'm like, okay, that's a big jump for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if my kid had interest, I'd watch it with him. Or yep. Maybe if he's watching it on his own, I'd be like, okay, that episode actually wasn't that bad. Maybe I'll go and check this out on my own.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll jump in, because I wanted to talk about this as well. My biggest issue with this series is the writing. The animation is great, I think. I don't think I've ever seen He-Man look better.
Sorry, just to jump. I think especially the last two episodes, there were some fight scenes where I'm like, how much money did you put into this episode? Because that was, you know what it was? It reminded me of the opening to Thundercats. It's arguably the best animation from that era.
Mm-hmm.
But then you watch an actual episode and you're like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bad, but it's nothing in comparison to that opening. The last group battle there of He-Man just destroying everyone is like the opening credits for Thundercats, but with 30 years better animation technology on it.
Yep. So yeah, the animation is fantastic, and for the most part, the voice cast is really good, but I agree with you, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar, I think, was miscast as Teela. And especially the dialogue that she had to deliver, like, Teela's a kind of a whiner, you know, in this show. And I think she might even be bipolar, to be honest with you. And by that I mean, like, she just changes on a dime, like, just instantly. Like, in the second last episode, you know, when she sees the sorceress coming up from the water or whatever, and they're, you know, going to hold hands, and then she just starts, like, getting, like, at first she's like, Mom? And she's, like, crying. And then the next thing you know, she's like, how dare you? How dare, you know, you lied to me, blah, blah, blah. It was like I was listening to a Greta Thunberg rant, you know? I was like, what? You, like, literally, you were just happy to see your mom. Quickly with the Man-at-Arms. Yeah, it was implied originally, I think, that Man-at-Arms and the Sorceress were Teela's parents. But I know in the 2002 series, because Fisto, and they didn't establish any of that in this series, Fisto is actually Man-at-Arms' brother. And then in that series, it was implied that Fisto was actually Teela's real father. Hmm. And that him and the Sorceress had a thing. And then, I don't know, for whatever reason, left or whatever. And I don't even know if he knew that she was pregnant. And then Man-at-Arms ends up raising Teela because she's got to become the Sorceress. So, yeah. You know, there's definitely, you know, some backstory there that I would love to have had explored. Like, and, like the first episode, I was actually on board. Like, even with the killing of He-Man and Skeletor, I was on board that first episode until Teela started, like, losing it on the King and Queen and Man-at-Arms, or her dad. I guess she was Man-at-Arms at that point. And I'm like, you're literally getting mad at parents who have just lost their child? you know, and throwing away your career, like, for what, you know, like, because he kept his, you know, identity a secret to you, like, to me, that's just silly, you know, like, it's a silly thing to be mad about, like, you should be grieving your friend, and as man at arms, like, this is how I would have approached it, if I was showrunning. If you want to go that route, you know, killing off He-Man, cool, okay, let's do it. And not necessarily turn it into the Teela show, but Teela, as Man-at-Arms, now has to, you know, assemble, the, you know, the Master, you know, the Masters, get them all together, and basically defend Eternia without He-Man. You know, because even with Skeletor gone, there's still threats out there. Like, there's, you know, Evil Lyn, there's all his minions, you know, all Skeletor's minions. You know, there's, you know, you could have the Snake Men show up, you know, the Horde, whatever, right? Like, Eternia and Castle Grayskull still need to be defended. So that should have been the focus of the show. That should have been, like, you know, and you can reintroduce all these characters. You can reintroduce Ram Man, Manny Faces, Mechanek, Roboto, Stratos, Buzz Off. You know, you can reintroduce all these characters and maybe introduce new ones, like is it Andra or Ardra? I can't remember.
Ardra, I think, which I guess she is on like a page or two of one of the mini comics that originally came with the figures.
Yeah, I think so.
But, I mean, that was a good unexplored character.
Oh, yeah.
The only other one, the Goatman and Pig Boy.
Hmm.
And then, which I had to look up, I'm like, I do not remember these at all.
No.
Pig Boy is in the Masters of the Universe movie.
Yep.
The Dolph Lundgren one. And he hands something to Skeletor, and apparently there was a contest that some kid won to be able to appear on set. Like, jeez. Like, that's a deep pull.
Yep. And in this show, you actually see Blade.
Yeah, and that shocked me. I was excited, though.
Yeah, Blade and, what's his name? Sauron? He's the one that gets killed in the movie by Skeletor.
I don't remember.
Sarad?
Sarad. I don't remember even seeing him.
Yeah, he. I believe he was in part one. I don't remember seeing him in part two. But yeah, just like briefly, like you just, you know, you blink, you missed them type of thing, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why they're allowed to be in it, but the others are not, like from the movie, is because those two had action figures in the Masters of the Universe line, so they can use them, but they can't use the other characters from the movie that were created for the movie. Pig Boy they could use. Because his main scenes were cut or something, and he didn't have a line in the final cut. But anyway, yeah, like that would have been my focus: is Teela getting all these characters together, having to defend, and then Evil Lyn doing the same. Like now the Skeletor's gone, she's the one in charge of Snake Mountain, and she, you know, and they want to strike back, and blah blah blah, and then eventually you learn that, you know, Skeletor's hiding in her staff, and you know, she has to find a way to bring him back. Like, that's how I would have approached it, because then you could reintroduce all these characters to a new audience, and then at the same time you could still, you know, bring back, you know, have He-Man and Skeletor show up, and, you know, the part two and whatever, right? But the whole, you know, Teela, you know, giving up her job and all that, it just drove me nuts. I really hated the redesign of Teela. You know, like when she got the, like, the shaved side, you know, side haircut, and it's, you know, Teela, like, you don't have to look butch in order to, you know, be an interesting character. Like I just found that a weird choice. Another thing, like, again with the writing, Teela had no previous magical experience, yet she becomes the most powerful sorceress ever. Like, she could actually change the rules of being a sorceress? Because that's a whole point of the sorceress. The tragic backstory of her is that she can't leave Castle Grayskull once she became the sorceress. She can leave as in her bird form, like Zoar or whatever. But she can't leave herself, right? And I mean, in the show, they're telling Teela this, and then she's like, "Nope, I'm doing it my way." And that's like, what? Like, how can, you know, like, you just change the rules because, you know, like, why didn't the sorceress just do that if that was an option? You know, I just, that really drove me nuts. And why can Orko be brought back from the dead, but not the sorceress? So that was weird. Stupid jokes. Like, you know, like, I realize Kevin Smith's the showrunner, but again, this is supposed to be a show. This should have been an all ages show. It should not be like an adult show, I don't think. You know, like Fisto, you know, when they're looking at Skellagod or whatever, and he's like, "I would fist him."
I can't believe they got away with it.
Yeah. And, what's her name there? Alicia Silverstone as Queen Marlena. Telling He-Man don't be late for dinner, and then her saying as if like she was, you know, like her character from Clueless. I'm like, ugh, God, that's terrible. And then some of the choice, like He-Man telling Skeletor he won't fight him at the end. I'm like, why? Like, he literally killed you. Like, why? You know, why now are you deciding? Yeah, I'm not going to fight you. You know, it was like, you know, like when Luke and Darth were fighting on the Death Star, you know, and Luke saying, "I won't fight you." Like, it's like, what? Like, I kind of get it because that's his dad and he's trying to turn him to the light side. But Skeletor, like, he literally stabbed you and literally killed you. And, oh, yeah, that, and another thing with Teela's magic, like her magically healing Adam. It was like, yeah, I don't know. That just bothered me. Another thing, when Andra becomes Man-at-Arms on the last episode. Okay, so she literally showed up for like 5 minutes in the last fight. And yes, she saved the king and Duncan. But what about all these other guardsmen? You know, like when Teela gave up her position at Man-at-Arms, are you telling me they didn't, fill that position? I would think that would be like a position that would get filled immediately. And I mean, people could argue and say, well, you know, maybe the current Man-at-Arms got killed on the battlefield. Okay. But a lot of these guardsmen, I'm just imagining myself in their position. You know, like, I'm at my current job for 14 years. I'm working my way up. I want to, you know, maybe one day become a manager, like say, a Man-at-Arms, perhaps. And then this person just shows up for 5 minutes, and now she's my boss with no previous training in what it means to be a guardsman? I would be pissed.
I mean, that does happen quite a lot in real life.
Oh, yeah, it does. And when it does, it pisses me off. I'm like, what? Like, if I was those guardsmen, I would be so pissed. Again, there's too much crying. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, Star Trek Discovery, this show. Like, there's just too much crying. Enough of the crying. We don't need... We're not looking to win an Emmy here. You know, like, we don't need all this crying. And I think a lot of the issues in the writer's room, no offense to Kevin Smith, but I think they were just getting high too much. You know, like, when they were writing this stuff down and just throwing random ideas at the wall, and then just used them all. They're like, okay, we got to do this. We got, you know, we got to have Fisto say, I'd fist him. You know, we got, you know, that'd be hilarious. You know, it's like, that's something someone, you know, stoned would come up with. Another thing, again, and this is, I think, just a sign of the times, I don't know. Evil Lyn gets off scot-free at the end of the episode, at the end of the season finale. You know, it was like, what's her name from Star Trek Picard? Agnes there. When, like, she killed Bruce Maddox. And then on the final episode, she's kissing Rios, and she's all smiles, and, you know, and they're flying off to new adventures. I'm like, what? Why is she not handcuffed? Why is she not in the brig? She literally murdered somebody. And yet, we're not going to dwell on that. We're not going to focus on that. It's all forgiven, I guess. Like, Evil Lyn literally was responsible for who knows how many deaths in this, in the final episode. And she gets, and they just let her go? Like, she's just free to roam and grow her hair again and frolic in the meadow that she was in, and you know, she puts her staff in into the ground, you know, to be used later, I guess. Like, how does she get away with this? I don't understand that. Like, if anything, she would probably be executed by King Randor for what she's done. But I guess that just got forgotten in the, you know, like somehow she's was redeemed in the last like 2 minutes of that episode. And again, you know, and this goes back with comic tropes. You kill people off too many times and bring them back, people are going to stop caring. You know, like, I mean, I didn't like the fact that they killed Orko off in part one, but to just bring him back all willy-nilly on the last episode, like, don't get me wrong, I'm glad he's back. He shouldn't have been dead in the first place. But now, in this universe, death, there is no consequences because death really has no meaning anymore. I'm assuming Fisto and Clamp Champ made it back too, but I didn't see them. And yeah, like, I agree with you, Kevin. It was so great to see Ram Man show up, but at the same time, I'm like, where was he this whole time? Like, they should have shown these characters. They should have all been developed at some point. And it's easy to do. Like, that's the beautiful thing. This is animation. It, you know, it's just a matter of getting voice actors in there. But I mean, you could have one or two voice actors, like genuine voice actors that could play multiple parts. You know, like, I know they had Kevin Conroy in as, was it Merman, I think? You could have had Kevin Conroy doing, like, three or four different voices, and it would have worked. And I mean, that's what they used to do, on the Filmation series. What's his name? Lou Scheimer. He used to do a bunch, like, most of the extra character voices he used to do. You know, it's just, I don't know, like, I didn't hate this series, I think it was a lot of missed opportunities, and I think one of the reasons why I you know, aside from being a fan of He-Man, why I took it to heart so much is because it was a long time coming. Like, I mean, this series was in development for, I want to say, like, 4 or 5 years at this point. And, you know, like, I assumed they were taking their time and thing, you know, cause, and I mean, the animation looked great, don't get me wrong, but I guess I was just expecting more from this. And again, I didn't even think about the kid aspect of it. This should be an all-ages show, and I wish they had made it that way. And you can make it that way. I think it's easier and lazier to be crude than it is to be thoughtful and all ages. So they went the easy route, I think, for this series, when they should have went the other way. It should have been an all ages show, something that you could show your kids and your grandkids. But anyway, Kevin, did you have anything more you wanted to throw out about this?
A couple things just going off. One, because it's a wrestling show, just to tie it in, if you look up current WWE women wrestler Rhea Ripley, she could easily cosplay as the jacked Evil Lyn from the ending. Easily.
Yeah.
You mentioned the voices, and Kevin Smith likes to use the same people and use his friends and all. And a lot of the stuff from Tila, you're right. I think it's not just her voice and the pitch of it, it's the delivery of the things too. I think a lot of this stuff would have landed better with a better delivery for it as well. So yeah. If I'm picking people that Kevin Smith likes to work with, Rosario Dawson doing the voice of Teela instead.
Yeah, that would have been an excellent choice.
Yep, she would have added some strength, some balls to it, for lack of a better term here.
Well,
and play around with the emotions better too.
Well, in the original series, it was Teela that was always using air quotes, the adult, in whatever situation they were in. She was the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. In this series, it's like she's the exact opposite of that. Like, she's the one that's having a temper tantrum. She's the one that's not being reasonable. Like, total change from the character, I think.
All right, and then you mentioned the, you know, because Teela all of a sudden becomes the most powerful sorceress, and it was kind of out of nowhere, and I rolled with it because I was enjoying myself. But to go back to part one, okay, so she goes to Subternia.
Yep.
She goes to Preternia. She is with Orko. She's with Evil Lyn. You have all of these opportunities of Teela is in these different places and different situations with different people. What if she learned a little bit of magic in each place?
Mm-hmm.
What if she, you know, discovered something from Scareclaw and you know, unlocked a little bit of power there, and then a little more in Preternia and the Heaven thing, and then a little more with Orko, and her and Evil Lyn get going back and forth, and something comes out. Like, it could have built. So when you got to then, it's like, oh, because of all these places she's been, because of this journey, because of a little bit of magic being learned at all these places, is why she has the ability to do this now.
Yeah.
Because all those little things were adding up to her becoming so powerful.
Yep.
And that's like one more pass at the script.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as soon as you have the script for that those last two episodes, like, wait a minute, we could double back to the beginning here and sprinkle things in so this doesn't seem out of nowhere. Hey, yep. Someone's dying by the gun in our Act 3 climax here. Maybe we should put the gun on page one so people know it's there.
Yep. Well, it's what I call the Rey Skywalker syndrome. You know, we're expected to believe that Teela is so powerful and so good with magic because her mom was a sorceress, right? With in the Star Wars sequels, you know, I mean, the first two movies, that was the big question. It's like, why is Rey so powerful? Like, when she's barely had any training at all. And then the third movie, they say, well, she's Palpatine's granddaughter. That's why she's so powerful. And it's like, I don't buy that. You know, like, Palpatine became as powerful as he was, not just because he was born that way. He had force powers, but he had to train. He had to learn. He had to study. He had to practice. Like, it took literally years. Like, he was, like, what, in his 60s when his plan actually started kicking off? You know, it didn't happen overnight. It took years and years, and arguably it was even harder. It would have been harder as a Sith because he has to hide his training. He has to hide his abilities because, you know, people think that the Sith are extinct. They don't exist anymore. So he has to keep that going. He can't just, you know, show up at a Jedi tournament and participate. He has to be secretive about it, and he has to hide from having Jedi even sensing him. I mean, that took years and years and years and years of training and discipline. It didn't just happen overnight. Whereas, like, with Rey, they expect us to just buy it. You know, like, oh, well, she's Palpatine's granddaughter, so that's why she could do it. No, that doesn't make sense. And it's the same with Teela. You know, if they had maybe done a flashback scene where she's, you know, like, before she knew about the sorceress being her mom, you know, do a flashback scene where the sorceress is showing her some stuff, you know, and you know, kind of teaching her, but not, you know, flat out telling her. I don't know. Just, again, it's just the writing. It just, they needed some better writing, I think, ultimately. I do have something that I got off Facebook. And this is a random fan from one of the Masters of the Universe groups I'm a part of. His name is Thammy Tembe. And I think what he says, I think, sums up what a lot of fans are thinking right now. So I'll just quickly read it. The other day, someone asked here how we truly felt about Revelation, and I gave a sincere answer, but was deleted immediately by the admins, even though I didn't use any slurs against anyone. There were maybe some buzzwords that I am now going to avoid, but I need to get it off my chest, because Revelation really is the culmination of everything wrong with entertainment nowadays. In recent years, the franchises I love, or loved, most, be it Star Wars, Marvel, DC, have all gone into the same direction of putting political messaging over good storytelling and is truthful to the source material. But I still had some hope for the new Netflix show about my childhood hero, He-Man. I mean, would they really dare make He-Man show not a He-Man show? Kevin Smith's statement about it being all about He-Man and the first trailer then reassured... I caught some of this off. Brought Eternia back to life. But then Revelation dropped, and I had to realize that it was even worse than I had ever feared. They didn't make a He-Man show, but yet another post-Harvey Weinstein story about empowering women. However, the story also wasn't about the old Teela, who I loved, and who had already been the perfect embodiment of female empowerment 40 years ago. They turned her into an unlikable, self-righteous, and entitled modern feminist cliche of a character. I was angry, sad, frustrated, and frankly, I've become somewhat bitter because it's all so cynical. Everything in the marketing of the show was made to lure in the old fans, which shows you see that they knew what many of us wanted to see. Nevertheless, they decided to go down a road that was destined to divide the fan base and ruin the experience of reliving some of our most precious childhood memories. Why would you let the 80s boys be boys again? There was already a Netflix She-Ra show that ticked all the boxes of modern political writing. Why couldn't you let He-Man fans have a show about He-Man? I totally agree with that statement. Don't get me wrong. I have no problem with, you know, bringing, you know, like he said, like Teela was a powerful woman 40 years ago, you know, I don't mind bringing in more female characters into the He-Man show. But for women, for girls, there's already a show. Like, that is what She-Ra's about, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm hoping, you know, maybe with season two, if they do a season two, it'll, you know, the writing will be maybe a little bit better. Maybe Kevin Smith will look at some of these criticisms and maybe make some changes. Or maybe they'll have a new showrunner. I don't know if Kevin Smith has even signed on for a season two. I don't know. But, yeah. Anyway, Kevin, what else did you want to talk about for Brain Candy?
Well, at time of recording, I am caught up on Hawkeye. Are you?
I am, yes.
Oh my god, it's so good.
It is good.
It's so good. I was trying to explain to someone at work. I said, if you remember when Netflix started their Marvel shows, Daredevil had that hallway fight.
Mm-hmm.
And people were going nuts about it.
Yep.
And then every Netflix season, we had to have another hallway fight to up the ante. That whole fight sequence, which is like half of episode 3, is so fun, so entertaining, so well shot, amazing stunt work, amazing camera direction, everything. I was like, that is one of the coolest superhero fights I've ever seen in one of these movies. That was just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
She is a great actress. She seems tough when need to be, seems vulnerable when needs to be, cocky when it has to be, sarcastic, caring, scared. Like, she is playing this part so well.
Yep.
To do the PTSD angle with Clint Barton with Hawkeye, to bring in him being deaf, which has been in the comics forever, and this is the first time we're exploring it in MCU.
Mm-hmm.
For him just being a family man. Oh my god, that scene in episode 3 where he couldn't hear his own son talk.
Yeah.
Oh god, that was heartbreaking. It was so sad. He's got to be home for Christmas, right? Like he walks in. Please tell me he walks in at like the stroke of midnight, and he just makes it, and Kate's with him, and he's like, "Hey, we got one extra for Christmas." Like, please tell me that's how this ends.
Yeah.
You know. The tease at the end of spoilers, everyone. Again, the tease at the end of episode 2 of Echo feeling the music through the vibrations of the speakers. I'm like, oh, jeez. And then when we finally get her going and all, yeah, no wonder she's getting her own show.
Yeah,
that actress just commanded every second she was on screen. She was the star of every moment on screen there. So cool looking. Now, I know Echo's deaf in the comics. I don't think she has a prosthesis in the comics, though. But I could be wrong. But there was an interesting thing on there, too.
Yep. And yeah, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I liked how they handled it. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. They're implying her... there's a word for it, and I can't remember it, but pretty much her photographic memory and copying, that she can see something be done and be able to repeat it and all.
She's a mimic.
So already strongly implying that you have, okay, she's mad at Ronan, she's upset her dad was killed, she believes by Ronan, but you can see ways that you could turn this character good down the road too. Like, that's why she's in the spot she is, because she blames someone for this. But if we flip that switch there, we don't have to. So that'll be interesting. They are, without a doubt, strongly implying Kingpin, especially episode 3. I counted, like, 3 or 4 different things where I'm like, oh my god, we're doing this. We're absolutely doing this. And I hope so. I hope it's not a red herring. I hope this is what happens, because it'll be so cool.
Yep.
What the hell else? I'm absolutely loving it. Pizza Dog's fantastic. So adorable. And I don't know how it didn't click. It did not click until the fencing fight. I'm like, holy shit, it's swordsmen.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing the swordsmen, which totally makes sense for Hawkeye, and I should have seen it coming, and I didn't. And I feel so stupid that I didn't see it coming. But, man, what an asshole actor, and he is playing that part so well. Like, when I knew when I watched WandaVision, I was like, all right, Catherine Hahn needs to be up for an Emmy immediately. I am already like, this whole show needs to be up for one next year. Like, this is just firing on all cylinders. Everything is fun. It's such a blast. I think at the end of it, it might be one of my top favorite Marvel things that they've done so far.
Nice.
I am just, I'm a longtime West Coast Avengers fan, but this is the, what is it, Matt Fraction run of Hawkeye?
Yep.
They're blatantly adapting and not paying for, which drives me nuts. But, so it's a different version of Hawkeye than I grew up with, but this is just beautiful. So much fun. When people are like, oh, Hawkeye should have died in Endgame. How is Hawkeye even still alive? So we can get this show. That's why Hawkeye stayed alive. So we can get this.
Yep. And there's more revelations to come. Because, from what I heard, Kingpin will be showing up in this series. But I also heard a rumor that it's going to be... Like, I want it to be Vincent D'Onofrio from Daredevil. Because when her uncle or whatever comes to pick her up and you see his hand... Mm-hmm. And he does that little chuckle or whatever. Like, that sounded so much like D'Onofrio. I'm like, I think that's him.
Especially that laugh, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, in my mind, like don't get me wrong. Like, I like the comic book Kingpin, like the big giant, you know, like he's huge. And there was a rumor floating around that they were going to go, like, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse version, like where like he's going to be like basically a CGI character. And I'm like, no, don't go that way. Just have Vincent D'Onofrio come back, you know? And just, like, I don't know why they're doing this thing where they don't want to acknowledge the Netflix shows. Just acknowledge them. Who cares? You know, or the original intention was that those shows were supposed to be part of the MCU. You know, and I mean, there was many references to events in the MCU. You could just say that they all those series took place before Infinity War, which a lot of them did. I'm not saying they should bring back that actor who played Luke Cage. I think he was the best. Like, he was amazing as Luke Cage. But I do want to see Charlie Cox back as Daredevil. And I know it's hinted that he's going to be in the new Spider-Man movie. I'm hoping so. Fingers crossed. I think I'm more excited about Charlie Cox coming back into the MCU than I am about Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire. Just because I love that Daredevil show so much. Not just for Charlie Cox as Daredevil, but for Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. Like, he was amazing as the Kingpin, and scary. Scary as all hell. Like, when he beat that guy to death with the car door and, like, decapitated him, I was like, whoa. Like, you know, this is definitely not a show for kids. Like, wow. But yeah, when they had that tease of him in this episode 3, I was like, please, you know, don't do this to me. If it's not D'Onofrio, don't, you know, it has to be D'Onofrio. Fingers crossed. But yeah, I'm loving this show. I think it's fantastic. I love that Mad Fraction run on Hawkeye. And I mean, they did obviously have to change things up. You know, yeah. The MCU Hawkeye, you know, he is a family man. And I mean, that was the driving force for Endgame, was that he wanted to get his family back. So, you know, like, I want him home for Christmas too. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, his family did come back from the dead. I think they could wait a few more days, you know, like, if need be. And when you think of the things like that character's literally flown in space on a spaceship. Like, how cool, he's literally been on an alien world. Like, how cool is that? You know, and he's just an everyday guy, like, real, other than being a, you know, super assassin and all that. But
right. Other than that.
But he's, you know, a father, he's, you know, got, you know, hearing problems, he's, you know, yeah, it's, this series, I don't know, some people have been criticizing it, saying it's boring and stuff. I don't think so.
God, there's nothing boring about it.
You know,
that's people that don't like character development, then.
Well, and that's the thing, like, this is a street level guy, like, this is, you know, like, he has no powers, like, this is a regular dude, like, you can't expect, you know, him going up against, you know, Thanos or something, you know, all the time. Like, he's, you know, like, he's a street level guy. And I love the jokes. I love, you know, like, when he did that, went to that LARPing thing.
Oh my God, episode two. That was one of the funniest scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. But yeah, no, I'm loving it. And it sucks it's only 6 episodes, because we're already halfway through this. I'm like, oh, man, this could have been 10 episodes. But sometimes it's better to have a short, even shorter season, as long as it's good quality. All right, well, real quick, for my brain candy, Foundation Season 1 ended last week. I really like this show. I never read the Isaac Asimov Foundation novels, but I'm enjoying it. I think there's some good acting in here. They did change some characters around. I'm told it's renewed for a season 2, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do with this. So yeah, Foundation is worth it, I think. As a rating, I would give it probably, 4 out of 5. It's good. There's a few things here and there that, a little nitpicking, but overall, it was good. And at the time of this record, I wanted to watch the first season of Heels, have it all washed, but unfortunately, I haven't got around to watching it. I have to renew Stars for another month. So that is on my list.
We'll get to it either.
Yeah, I've just been rewatching The Shield, and I got too into it. I'm like, yeah, I don't got time. And Dark Side of the Ring. I gotta watch the new season. That's still on my to do list. All right. Well, let's move on to the final segment of the evening, and that is our Enders segment. This is the segment where we talk about geek news. So, Kevin, do you have anything for the Enders segment tonight?
So this was just coming out within the last couple days. It's been very interesting, though. But it seems like some owners of certain IPs are ending their contracts.
Okay.
And we're not quite sure where stuff is going next. So Marvel canceled Savage Avengers. And a company that made a Conan video game decided to buy the rights to Conan outright.
Hmm.
So no one knows what that means for the comics anymore.
Oh.
And Marvel's done this because they did they did some what-if stories with Conan.
Mm-hmm.
They've had some, you know, little time travel. But then the Savage Avengers thing has been going on, 2.5 years.
Yep.
Of him in the Savage Land as part of an Avengers team. I'm like, so if he goes and you can't do it anymore, then these stories can't be reprinted because, the company would own Conan, but they want to own the rest of your Marvel heroes, like Wolverine or, you know, whoever else is in it.
Yeah.
But this is the second go-around that you've done this, though, where you're like, let's put Conan into things, and then you can't republish it.
Yeah.
IDW was publishing the Star Wars comics for kids. Yep. As a deal through Marvel. That ended, and those Star Wars for Kids ones are going to Dark Horse. They did announce that one.
Okay.
And then apparently, who has it? Is it IDW still? I think it's IDW. Had Transformers and mm-hmm. G.I. Joe, the Hasbro properties,
yep.
And announced they're losing that contract, but they haven't announced where they're going next, though.
Hmm.
But the G.I. Joe one kind of sucks because they, IDW, brought Larry Hama in
yep.
to keep writing G.I. Joe as a continuation of his Marvel run.
Yep.
So his Marvel run ended with issue, 100 whatever, and this picked up as the next issue. And it's been going for a few years, too. And people love it because it feels like one long story that you've been reading since the 80s there for it.
Yep.
No one knows where these books are going, though.
Well,
and these are big IPs that the comics got to sell well enough to keep doing them.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Larry Hama is he really is the godfather of what we know now as G.I. Joe.
Absolutely.
Like when they did the, not only did he do the comic series, but like for the toys, like when they had the little action card thing in the back of the packaging, like that was written by Larry Hama. He came up with a lot of their backstories, a lot of the names of the characters and stuff. Even though I'm not current on G.I. Joe, I it's one of those comic books that I always, like to check out every once in a while, and that's too bad. And I really hope Marvel doesn't lose Conan. I'm hoping they make a deal with this company. I'm hoping, fingers crossed.
Yeah, and they might. It's still new. Stuff is still happening.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not into the Savage Avengers. I kind of didn't buy into that. But I love his other, like, the new Conan series from Marvel. I've been reading them all. Like, there was, Conan the Barbarian and then Savage Sword. And there's supposed to be a King Conan, I think, starting in January by mm-hmm. Jason Aaron.
Yeah, I think there's one solicited so far.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been waiting for that one for like a year and a half now. Like, I love it when Marvel has Conan. No offense to, who had it before? Dark Horse? Was it Dark Horse that had Conan just previously? I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, they were okay, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. Like Marvel got it, and then immediately they got Jason Aaron writing and Jerry Dugan and, some of their top talent, and, It was great. It was fantastic. I mean, Dark Horse did do good, too. I mean, they did have Kurt Busiek writing for Conan. But I don't know. Conan just seems at home with Marvel. So, yeah, hopefully they can get things figured out.
I mean, I understand some of it, but I feel like you would have to get to a point where how well are you really going to negotiate your contract? Like, you think some indie's going to, you know, give you the same amount of money and sell the same amount of copies as Marvel will for it? And I'm not saying Marvel needs to have everything, but Conan, I think they would make a lot of sense. And funny thing is, that's just in America. In America, this is how the Conan rights are, but in other countries, Conan is public domain already. So there's one, is it French? I think it's a French comic that adapts the Conan stories, the original Robert E. Howard stories. And this indie company of Blaze is bringing it to America, but they gotta call it The Sumerian.
Yes, yep.
But it's beautiful art. It's really well done. It'll make you fall in love with the Conan stories, but they can't call it Conan.
Yeah.
Because he's not public domain in the U.S. I'm just like, what in the hell?
Yeah, I know. I've actually read a couple of those. Those are great.
Really good. I mean, copyright stuff just gets me going for things. You know, I think ROM is ridiculous that Marvel couldn't just buy it out.
Yeah.
Considering how well they've done it. You know, how long of a run they had for the character for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand, let's just sit on a property and not use it either.
Yep.
So who knows? But looking at some of the publishers, Marvel seems to just be doing, like, event after event. Dark Ages is self-contained, but the new one's going to be Devil's Reign, which is a Daredevil focus one.
Okay.
But I was flipping through the new previews and we're going to have like a Devil's Reign Captain America one shot and a Spider-Man one shot, a Kingpin offshoot. And like, we're going to have all these little offshoots to the story. I'm like, no, I'm curious about this main story. That sounds interesting, but I don't need to buy all of these.
Yep.
But that's going to be like the next 6 months of the books. I gave up on X-Men. I don't know what the hell is happening.
Yeah. And it's too bad. Hickman's run began so good, like with that X of Swords and
House of X and Powers of X.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and then it just I had to drop off.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell is going on anymore for them.
and that's what I hate about these crossover events, all these tie-ins. Like, I know, like, the Star Wars one, is it War of the Bounty Hunters?
Yeah.
There was, like, 32 comics you had to read to get the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no. Because the only Star Wars book I'm reading is Darth Vader. So I was like, no, I'm just going to wait till this is over, and then I'll start reading Darth Vader again. Because I don't need all this. Like, this is ridiculous.
Well, and it's funny, I didn't intend to go down this way, but ties in. One of my friends went to see, I think it was Eternals. Okay. And his movie theater, when you get your ticket, however he booked it, they also gave a free month of Marvel Unlimited.
Oh.
So he sent me that free coupon to try it out, and then it's $10 a month if I decide to keep it.
Yeah.
But I'm looking through, I'm like, so they're saying there's between 20,000 and 30,000 Marvel comics on here, and after the comic has been out 3 months, it's on here.
Yep.
Like, something I love or something I really want to read day one, I'll go ahead. But there's a lot of stuff. I have 3-4 issues here. I clearly could have waited 3 months for it because I didn't read it yet anyways. But the Star Wars one, I'm not going to buy 30-something issues of a crossover, even in graphic novel form. That's going to be a crazy amount of money.
Yep.
But I'll go ahead and read that full story on Unlimited that I'm paying, you know, the $10 for. Not that I need another streaming service, because that's really what it is.
Yep.
But that's 3 comics now for that $10, you know?
Yep. Speaking of Eternals, have you seen it at all, Kev? Or...
Yes.
What did you think?
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't, but go ahead. You can talk about it, spoil it, whatever you want.
So I, because my dad was asking about it, I said, it's Marvel doing Greek gods, mm-hmm. which is my shorthand for it. And he's like, okay, that gives me something to base it off of. And I meant that. Because, Mercari runs fast. All right, obviously that's inspiration for Mercury. Yeah. You know, Athena, Gilgamesh, you know, the earliest heroic epic that we're aware of. Like, clearly this is where Kirby took the inspiration from.
Yeah.
And it gives it a good shorthand, Icarus, you know, like all the names are there. But then someone pointed out, and something else I was listening to, is like, it's not that, it's Marvel doing Justice League. And I'm like, kind of way it can, but in the way Justice League is the pantheon of gods as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, all right, I can see that too. And that gave a shorthand for me to get people up to speed on it. It is too much going on in a just over 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
There's just, okay, we meet this Eternal and then... she meets another one, so now we know who that is, and then they meet another one, and then they gotta go get this person, so we meet another one. I'm like, there's too many people introduced in a 2-hour movie. Mm-hmm. We need to be introduced to all of them, have a conflict, have a reason for them to fight, have all these dynamics, have a big battle at the end. It's too much. Especially when you have the Disney Plus option.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they did this as a 6-episode series, so it's kind of like 3 2-hour movies, okay, cool.
Yep.
That gives time for these characters to breathe. Now, considering the cast and the money, I'm guessing I understand why that didn't happen. Make it 2 movies then. Eternals 1 and 2 do summer and winter, or 2 summers in a row or something.
Yep.
Like, there's just too much going on here for that length of a movie.
Yep.
Based on the end and where everyone ends up and what's happening, and there's... barely any tie-in with pre-existing Marvel. There's references to people, but no one shows up. No one crosses over. It's really self-contained. But my kid has been rewatching all the Avengers movies. And he rewatched Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, Age of Ultron, when it came out, was fine. But that's just it. It was fine. It's an Avengers movie. It's interesting. We're introduced to a lot of new characters. We get Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, Vision, and Ultron all in that one movie. In addition to our previously established Avengers cast, which is huge.
Yep.
And random side people, you know. So that's a lot of people in that movie from the get-go. Also, we don't really know Scarlet Witch's whole deal yet. We don't know Vision's whole deal yet. Thor and Iron Man have visions, not Vision, you know, the hero, but like, here's the Avengers all defeated and dead, and you think it's tied into Ultron. And on its own, there were all these assumptions, and it was, again, fine. But rewatching Age of Ultron, now that we've gotten all the way up to Endgame, that movie holds up a lot better. Oh, this is groundwork here. This is implication here. This is foreshadowing here.
Mm-hmm.
Age of Ultron works great as a middle chapter of a bigger book. If I read that chapter on my own, I'm like, well, the writing's nice and it's a good story, but I'm not getting the full story here, so I can't give a full opinion. When I read that chapter and I've read the entire book now as well, oh, geez, this chapter holds up well. There's a lot going on here. This is very interesting.
Yep.
And I'm thinking Eternals is going to end up being like that.
Okay.
I think in 4 years, 5 years, as we know where the story is going, we're going to be like, wow, Eternals set up so much. This is happening now, and this character is over here, and we're introduced to this idea because of Eternals. So this whole concept was in this movie. I think it's going to hold up a lot better later on when we know where the pieces are landing and what was set up. But right now, it's just like, I don't know what any of this is going to mean. It was an interesting superhero movie. I liked it. There's cool stuff. But as part of my greater story, what the fuck does it matter?
Yeah.
And we don't know yet. So I really feel when we revisit, it will land a lot better. But Shang-Chi was brand new characters we're getting introduced to, and that movie's awesome. I loved Shang-Chi. I thought it stood on its own very well, and I'm curious what he's going to do next. Whereas Eternals, I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know what I'm supposed to care about yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that... Honestly, Eternals is the first Marvel movie, I think... I was trying to think about this. I think every Marvel movie, basically since Avengers... Oh, no. After Guardians of the Galaxy. So whatever came after Guardians of the Galaxy. I've made a point of driving into the city to watch, like, usually opening week. Like, not necessarily opening weekend, but, you know, because sometimes I'm working the weekend that they're released, so then I'll go see it, like, on the Tuesday or whatever, Wednesday afterwards. This is the first Marvel movie since Guardians of the Galaxy where I didn't do that. Guardians of the Galaxy, I really had no faith in because I didn't really know much about the source material. So I waited till it came to my local theater. And then I was like blown away. I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is way better than I thought it was going to be. With this one, I had that same kind of vibe where I'm like, I'm just going to wait till it comes to my local theater instead of making a special trip because I just don't have a positive enough vibe. Like, this is the first Marvel movie where I kind of questioned it. I'm like, I don't know. Like, this seems to be, to me, a little too much. And basically what you were saying, Kevin, like, your sentiments on it, like, that's what I've been hearing. I mean, I'm still gonna, like I said, when it comes to my local, I'm still gonna go see it. But this was the first Marvel movie that I didn't go see at the opening week. That being said, I'm already making plans to go see Spider-Man opening weekend. Like I've already talked to my brother-in-law cause he just recently binged all the Marvel movies. So he's loving it. So I'm going to take my son cause my son's out for Christmas that weekend. Cause we're having our Christmas dinner on December 18th. Cause I have to work Christmas, so I'm not going to be here. So we're having our Christmas dinner on the 18th, and then the 19th, the Sunday, we're going to do a special trip into the city. And I'm treating the guys. Like, it's going to be my brother-in-law, me, my son, and my nephew. We're going to go in and watch the new Spider-Man movie. I'm assuming my nephew. I don't know. I haven't actually asked him yet. I don't know. He might be like, nah, I'll pass. But either way, we're doing a special trip into the city just to watch Spider-Man because I'm that excited for that movie. But Eternals, yeah, I don't know. I just had this feeling. I was like, no, I think I'm just going to wait. And I don't know when it's coming to my local. Like, this weekend, Dune is playing, which I've already seen. I made a special trip into the city to watch that one, and I loved it. And I'm going to go watch it again this weekend at the local. Maybe I'll find out when Eternals is coming. I don't know. They have a hard time getting like Disney movies in a timely manner at our local theater. Like, it's like they have to wait longer for Disney movies than they do any other type of movie. Cause some movies they get like that come out, they get it opening weekend, but it's never the Disney movies. And I don't know why. Other than Disney's hard to deal with, and
I mean, yeah, probably
costs a lot. But yeah, the only thing I had for Enders this week is apparently all the Fantastic Four stuff is being taken off of Disney Plus. Like the Fantastic Four movies, like the three movies that they did in the 2000s and 2000 was it 2016 when that last one came out?
Yeah, I think so.
And then I never did watch that because I just had no desire to watch it. And then also the Fantastic Four cartoons, I believe, have been taken off Disney Plus.
Really?
So I don't know. Like, I know they're doing a Fantastic Four movie. Like, that is in the works. I don't know if they're doing that in preparation. But to me, it's kind of silly. Like, wouldn't you want... Like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of a weird thing. Like, I guess you don't want people to watch these other movies because they weren't as popular, and you don't want to, like, taint a potential audience. Like, oh, I don't want to watch that. That looks stupid. The new one will probably be stupid, too. Or it could do the opposite, where it's like, these were okay, but I want to see something better, and I want to see how the MCU does this. I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason behind this, but...
It's
weird, because, like, I know Marvel did this thing where they canceled the Fantastic Four comic book for a couple of years. And it was around the time that movie came out, which I thought was stupid. It's like, you know, Fantastic Four always sells. Like, it might not be the best-selling book at any given time, but sometimes it is.
They did that. Whoever was in charge of Marvel at the time was pissed that Fox had
the rights.
And they couldn't cancel X-Men because X-Men's huge, but that's when they started pushing the Inhumans.
Yes.
Then coincidentally, once Marvel/Disney got X-Men back, we don't hear peep about the Inhumans anymore.
That Inhuman show sucked.
Yeah.
It's too bad, too. Like, I really love, what's his name? Anson Mount. But, anyway. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Fantastic Four always comes back. And I gotta tell you, like, out of current Marvel, that's probably my favorite comic book right now, is Dan Slott's Fantastic Four. It's great. You know,
it's been interesting. It's more what I want Fantastic Four to be. Groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Like, I want them to be the introduction to new ideas and new concepts in Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things I always loved about the Fantastic Four is when they would change the lineup. That's when it was always my favorite. Like, when She-Hulk was on it, like, I think that's my favorite Fantastic Four run. You know, nothing against the Thing, but I like changing it up. I like, you know, it's like the Avengers. Like, whenever they would change their lineup, I was always, oh, this is cool. Or the Justice League. But anyway.
Oh, hey.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Nope. All right. So Fantastic Four, it's looking like it was a 6-month deal at first. It's part of an old Fox deal. It was a 6-month deal on Disney Plus. It's now on Peacock for a little bit.
Huh.
And then it's supposed to go back to Disney Plus. Some of these streaming deals were already in place before the buyout, so they got to honor them still.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, I don't know, maybe it's still on Disney Plus in Canada? Like, I haven't checked, but we don't have Peacock up here, so it's possible.
No, you're not missing much.
No, I'm not. That first Fantastic Four movie, I think, was actually not bad. It's just all of a sudden it seemed like it ended. I'm like, mm-hmm. It's like we had a beginning, a middle, and then, I don't know, it felt like there was the beginning, the climax, and end. It's like, where's the middle? Like, where's the middle of this movie? I think it was only like an hour and a half long.
But yeah, it was quick.
But it was like, where's the rest? It felt like an incomplete movie to me. And I mean, I love Michael Chiklis, you know, because he's from On the Shield. And he was great as Ben Grimm, but I did not like the way the practical effects looked. You know, like, I want the Thing to look like the Thing, like, you know, like the brick and mortar looking Thing, not the clumpy original version. So hopefully, with fingers crossed, MCU money, you know, we can get if we can get a believable Thanos, I'm sure we can get a believable Hulk, we can get a believable Thing. I'm hoping.
Oh, for sure. He's going to look great in it.
Yeah. But, all right. Well, I guess we can call this an episode. But before we go, let's play that little game of where we can find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right, you can find me, masslibrary.com is my home blog, at masslibrary on social medias. I have my other podcast, Hellions Talks, which I'm recording a new app tomorrow and putting it up right away because it's kind of time sensitive. And then I got messing with my Patreon again. I have some assignments I got finished up for the Retro Network. But first of all, I have a magazine assignment I have to finish this week. And then that will be out soon as well.
Cool.
It's almost like in the middle of the holidays, it's tough to get other things done.
Yep. Yep. They call it the most wonderful time of the year, but in my mind, it's the busiest time.
Yeah.
You know,
I gave up caffeine and sodas and coffees, and I've bought coffee every day this week to just try to get stay awake and get more done.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, for me, I'm here at the Pop Culture Pub. You can check out, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ChrisLock1701. I occasionally blog, so you can check out my blog over at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And yeah, so our next episode is going to be the 2021 Chris Locker Christmas special. So yeah, for the rest of the year, we got that, and then we'll have another episode after that where we talk about the best of 2021. And then, yeah, it'll be holiday times. So anyway, thank you, Kevin, for tonight's episode. And this was our wrestling episode, our top five professional wrestlers of all time. And I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to us talk about them. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Bells of party rocking around the Christmas tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way. Holiday.